At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
This happened to me when I just started Shasta College right out of high school. I was 18 years old at the time, short and petite. I had just landed my first part-time job as a secretary. On Fridays, I really loved to go to the mall after work, especially on paydays. Back then, you could stretch $10 pretty far. On the day of this incident, I was walking through the mall to the bus stop when this dude wearing jeans, a blue t-shirt, and a backwards cap just stepped out in front of me all of a sudden. He stretched, stopped, and then waited for me to get even with him. He started talking to me right away like he knew me, and this kind of creeped me out. He was over-friendly, asking me how my day was, that I looked nice, and what I was shopping for, and I just gave him short answers. I started to get uncomfortable when he wouldn't leave and ignored my attempts at being rude. There weren't that many people in the mall, no security guards, and all I had to defend myself with was a small purse and a bag of toiletries that I had just bought. This never happened to me before. I was alone and not very street smart. I felt myself sweating and my voice started to shake. He kept walking and talking to me. The conversation got even creepier when he'd asked if I had a boyfriend or if I was married, and stupidly I said no. Then he started making comments about my body, hair, and eyes, and how I could come work for him. He said he had a studio, which I didn't believe at all. I had to get back to campus for work, but I didn't want this creep to follow me and possibly get on the bus with me. So I did the only thing my 18-year-old mind could think of. I threw myself into this jewelry store and then ran toward the counter. I knew that I'd miss my bus, but at least I wasn't alone. The dude just said bye and kept walking. I was so relieved to lose him, but also frustrated at the same time because I'd be late for work. I hated him for even talking to me. He was gross and he smelled disgusting. Some time went by and I eventually forgot all about the creepy experience. I had a boyfriend now, and I was hanging out at his apartment when the local news came on the TV. The reporter talked about a human trafficker who was arrested near the Shasta Mall. He was targeting and soliciting teens for sex work. I looked up and I saw the creepy dude on the TV screen in handcuffs, Lamont Brown. It all came back to me, and I felt the willies all over again. I'm really glad that I only saw him once. And after that encounter, I was a lot more careful when I went shopping alone. I think that he thought I was younger than I was, because the report said that he was interested in minors. I've included a link to the news article and it'll be in the description. I really hope he never scares anyone again. My name is Tatum. I'm a girl and I just turned 20 a few months ago. I live in a small town in the south with my mom in a pretty dinky apartment. It's definitely not the best, but with prices going up, it's all we have. We have two cats who stay indoors, which will be important later on. I don't really go out that much. I have a debilitating anxiety disorder which caused me to refrain from even going to the grocery store, much less meeting people. Luckily, I really love talking to people online, which was a major help in becoming a small content creator on TikTok and Instagram. I live stream and post selfies, talk about fashion, music, food, and everything else really. Sometimes I even do my best to give people advice if they ask. It's a pretty decent gig in my opinion. Not the best pay, but at least I'm getting some income from just putting on makeup and talking to a camera. Now, don't get me wrong. I do get weirdos in my DMs, and they've said some pretty nasty things, but it's easy to look past now that I've been doing this for a good year. I've even made some friends, and there are quite a few who even live in my area. I was super excited at first, finally having people to talk to. One such person was called T. Now, T was a mutual friend of another friend of mine that I'd met online. Our first interaction he sent me was an angry face and said something along the lines of, "How dare you speak to our mutual friend? We will fight to be in his good graces." I thought it was hilarious. I responded and joked back, telling him to bring it on, but then cleared up that I was in no way romantically interested in the mutual friend. This person and I continued exchanging messages, mostly just focused around our friend and how close they are to one another. I soon grew closer to this T without even really knowing who he was. We talked about his relationship with his girlfriend, our mutual interest in music and alternative styles, and even bonded over shared experiences of mental illness. I was just so happy to have a friend who seemed to understand me completely. After a good month of messaging, T invited me to play a few games on Xbox along with our mutual friend. We hopped in party chat together and it was an instant click. I stayed up past 1 a.m. just to talk to him some more. He was funny, charismatic, a bit flirty, and seemed respectful though. It was the perfect mix. After 5 hours of playing Apex, I hopped off for the night. Well, the next morning, I woke up to about 10 messages from him over Instagram and Snapchat, just saying hello and then informing me that he had finally broke up with his girlfriend. I knew that they'd been having problems for a while, so I supported him and I told him to come to me if he ever needed anything, but that I was happy that he was doing what he felt was best. Throughout the rest of the day, he'd messaged me about how he liked his coworker, how he was going to get with her, and how they'd been flirting for months. I thought it was odd how he was bragging about this because he was practically admitting to emotionally cheating on his now ex-girlfriend. I soon got messages that same evening complaining that no one loves him and how everyone is just the same. I was confused. He had just told me a few hours before that he was planning on being with his coworker. He then informed me that his coworker suddenly blocked him on everything and even quit her job. Despite a few alarm bells going off in my head already, I just supported him and said to do what he thought was best. That night, he had swiftly moved on to texting another girl. This pattern continued throughout a few nights. He would cry to me about his mental illness and how no one but me understood, as well as jumping from girl to girl in different talking stages. That was until one morning, I woke up to find him confessing to me over text. I knew that his mood was fragile, especially due to BPD. So I was very careful with my words. I admitted to thinking he was attractive and that I cared for him, but that I wasn't looking for anything more than friendship at the moment. T said he understood, but that he would like to at least talk a bit more and get to know each other, to which I agreed. Now, I have BPD as well, and I'm actively going to therapy. I know what it's like to spiral and have episodes, but T was scary. We only talked for about a week. Yet, if I left him on read or dared not to answer for half an hour, I would then be accused of cheating, ghosting, and even planning to hurt him. He even went as far as sending me my own address, right down to the apartment number. He constantly wanted to be talking over the phone, always had some reason to be upset, and needed me to reassure him. It was extremely draining. He even got jealous after he invited a 13-year-old boy into our Xbox party. And when I laughed at something that was said, T then accused the boy of trying to get with me. It was honestly disturbing. After a week, I had enough. I told T that I cared for him deeply and I loved him as a person, but that there was no way I could handle whatever this was as well as working on improving myself. I was extremely careful with my words, and I made sure to tell him to have a proper support system. This was a horrible decision on my part. I didn't block him due to not seeing it as serious. I just never messaged or looked at his accounts and just simply unfollowed and moved on. After a day, I started getting random accounts following me, along with odd message requests saying, "Come home. I really miss my wife." He even called me drunk one night crying, begging to know what he did wrong. I calmly and gently explained that we just weren't a good fit, and that he needed to get some rest to think clearly, even suggesting that he should speak with someone about how he felt due to his past with his self-harming behaviors. He then hung up and began spamming me with 300 plus messages over WhatsApp. He claimed that I was the one having a mental health crisis, and that I was the one being self-destructive, then begging me to just speak to him. He went so far as to request money from me over Cash App, wanting back like $15 that he'd sent weeks prior. I sent the money, but that was all. But I was soon then bombarded with more messages saying that he didn't actually want it back and that he just wanted my attention. One specifically said, "I'm dying for your attention. I'm dying for you." After a few days, it had died down. I hadn't received any more messages or calls, and no odd followings from strange accounts. I thought this was it. But of course, I was wrong. After coming out of my therapy session, which was in another city, I had a message on Facebook from an old friend that I had met in middle school. I hadn't spoken to her for years at this point. Well, she sent me screenshots of his alt account asking her all about me by my full name, wanting to know about my earlier life and things of that sort. I remember one message even said, "Oh yeah, she's my total dream girl, you know? It was so perfect. She's literally me. We're soulmates." After that, my old friend messaged him back and said she was uncomfortable with how he spoke of me, and that she'd be sending me their full conversation, which she soon did. I was, of course, creeped the hell out. I knew this guy was a weirdo for reacting the way that he did, but to go so far as messaging random people on my friends list, who else had he done this to? That evening, I was planning on sending him a serious message, but that was thrown out the window when we found our door open. The handle was still locked but not pulled shut, which we always check multiple times before we leave, so we obviously could tell that someone opened it. I checked the rooms with the town police on speed dial, even looking under beds and closets, under tables, everywhere someone could hide. No one was there. Nothing was touched except for my room, the door wide open, and both cats hiding under my couch with their tails fluffed up. My comforter had been pulled off my futon and it looked like someone laid in it. The only thing really missing was my Buck 120 knife, which I took pride in, and my guitars now leaned against the wall instead of my closet door where I'd left them. Someone had come in, but no one else had a key but my mom, who drove me to my appointments. I didn't sleep that night, and I blogged T on everything. Sometimes I see his alt account view my TikTok profile, but I haven't heard from him since. I've put cameras inside and am constantly checking that I've locked my door and windows, even checking rooms before bed as well as soon as I wake up. I'm still worried as this all just happened a week ago, but the police refused to do anything about it since there isn't a deliberate threat. I still to this day don't really know if it was him or someone else that broke into my room, but in any case, it's really creepy. And also, I really miss my knife. About 3 months before the COVID lockdown, I had to unexpectedly find a new home. I'm a single mom of my daughter, who at the time was only 5 years old, and my nonverbal and autistic son, who was 4. Luckily, right before lockdown, a friend of a friend told me your uncle was renting out his farmhouse until he could sell it. Having no other choice and knowing a lockdown was inevitable, I accepted the offer. Now, this farmhouse was just over 3 miles away from the town where I lived. The typical UK country roads, no streetlights, and the nearest shop was 1.5 miles away. I don't drive, and the only reason I accepted the offer was because I knew because of the lockdown I wouldn't have to get my kids to school. A friend took us on the day of the move, and we only had personal items to really take, as the farmhouse was fully furnished. The first thing I noticed was just how secluded it was. It wasn't like a regular farmhouse. The owner had replaced the old windows with full-length ones that totally covered one side of the house and then looked out onto a beautiful meadow, like a beautiful field full of wildflowers. It was stunning. Where the flowers stopped, at a guess I'd say it was half the length of a football field, there was a small forest. Not a thick and dense forest. The trees had a person-sized distance in between each one, and with the sun shining through, it actually looked like something from a fairy tale. Apart from a very long, muddy driveway leading up to the house, The rest was surrounded by fields that seemed to go on for miles. After dragging our belongings onto the front wooden patio, my friend had to leave right away, so it was just me, Maggie, and Seth to explore our new temporary home. It had two floors, the living and dining room, large bathroom, and two bedrooms on the ground floor. Everything was either very old and farmhouse style, or very new and modern, and it didn't fit well with the old farmhouse, yet it was clean and I was grateful. An old open staircase in the corner of the living room led to one big room the size of the full ground floor, which also had the wall of full-length windows. It was big, warm, and full of light. I loved it, and I knew I was going to make it our living room area. Now, what I didn't start my story with is the reason for us moving. Just after my son's second birthday, his dad passed away. It was an unexpected short battle with cancer. We weren't even together at the time and lived a 3-hour drive away. He wasn't the most law-abiding citizen, shall we say, but had a large group of very loyal friends, one which he called his brother. His name was Tommy. I'd only met him a handful of times but disliked him instantly. He had a look. I can only explain it as if a wild animal was lying in wait stalking its prey, and he never once took his eyes off me. That is, unless Seth's dad spoke to him or looked at him, then he'd quickly look away. A couple of times if we were left in the same room together even for a second, he'd instantly move a few steps closer and look me right in the eyes to make conversation. He made my skin crawl. Well, after Seth's dad died, Tommy decided to take it upon himself to look after us. And to cut a very long story short, well, it ended up with a restraining order and then a court case. All he ended up with was a slap on the wrist. After stalking, watching, and absolutely terrifying me for a year, and he didn't stop. Hence our quick, quiet move. Anyway, 2 microwave meals, 2 lots of clean bedding, and 2 bedtime stories later, both kids were snoring, and after pouring myself a long, large glass of wine, I locked up downstairs and went up to my favorite room. I'd heard on the local news that we were expecting a pretty bad thunderstorm throughout the night, and I couldn't wait to watch it with the view we had. The glow from the small electric fire and the fiery lights that I'd added around the room made it feel so cozy and safe. I pulled a big snuggle chair over to the windows along with a fluffy blanket, of course not forgetting my wine as well, and for the first time in hours picked up my phone to see 15 missed calls plus the voicemail flashing. Maggie had been using it to watch YouTube earlier and must have just turned the volume switch off. Most were from the friend who dropped us off, a couple from my mom, and then some unknown number. The first couple of voicemails were just my friend sounding frantic telling me to pick up. The third.
Hi there, this is DCI Jones. We have an issue. You need to double lock all your windows and doors and then call me back immediately.
Oh shit. My stomach sank. DCI Jones was the detective who helped me through the Tommy case. I ran downstairs while I was waiting for the fourth voicemail to play.
Hello, sweetheart. I'll see you very soon.
It was freaking Tommy. I've never felt fear like I did at that very moment. Not even when Tommy had me trapped in my own house, saying that he loved me enough to kill us both. I quickly picked up Seth and then half-dragged poor Maggie upstairs. Luckily, both were that tired that they snuggled together on the sofa and then went straight back to sleep. With my heart still pounding, I ran back downstairs, double-checking the windows and doors while trying to ring my friend. She picked up the phone, quickly crying.
Ricky, he followed me. I'm so sorry.
By this point, I was having a borderline panic attack. I grabbed my knife from the kitchen, sobbing hysterically, just thinking, this is it. I'm gonna die tonight. He's really gonna kill me. As I was running back up the stairs, my phone rang again, and thinking it would be the police, I picked up.
You look so beautiful, sweetheart. You couldn't have picked a better place to move because I can see everything through them windows.
Oh my God, shit. I quickly turned to look out the windows and right past the field. At the very edge of the pitch black forest, I could see the very small light of a mobile phone. Everything happened so quickly after that. Flashing lights heading over the field towards the mobile phone light, banging on the front door, and the kids waking up crying to see me sobbing on the floor. When they finally caught Tommy, he had a rape kit with him, along with a gun and sleeping tablets. He was sentenced for just 2 years, and I got the phone call last month to let me know that he'd done his time. The kids and I moved over 100 miles away not too long after the court case, and we had to cut contact with everyone close to us. We were really lucky that night, but I know I'm gonna forever be looking over my shoulder. Let me share with you a true creepy and frightening story that happened when I was a child. The story contains relation with a minor and adult themes, so anybody not wanting to listen, please skip this story. My name is Sasha, and I won't be using my last name for privacy reasons. I'm a young Russian-American lady who was born in the year of 1999 in Brooklyn, New York, in Brighton Beach. Brighton Beach is nicknamed Little Odessa because of its large Russian population. Native New Yorkers thought that Brighton Beach was in the decline. Soviet refugees from Odessa saw it as a large land of opportunity. Its Jewish population and low rents made it comfortable and affordable, and the Atlantic Ocean reminded the newcomers of the Black Sea. New York is actually the home of the largest Russian population. My own mother was a Jewish lady born in the former Soviet Union and came to America for a better life. She became a school teacher and got married and settled in the large Russian population of Brighton Beach. Soon they had a baby girl, which was me, Sasha. Tourists from all over the world came to Brighton Beach and Coney Island as well. Brighton Beach is quieter than Coney Island, and the beach is usually emptier, but with a lot of cigarette butts. Coney Island does too, along with broken bottles. My girlfriend Olga and I even found an old gun in the Coney Island weeds once. I really enjoy both Brighton Beach and Coney Island. I love eating pizza, hot dogs, hamburgers, chicken, and ice cream cones, along with other yummy things. Not to mention the amusement rides. But it was the year 2011 when I was 12 years old when my nightmare happened. School was over, and the kids were enjoying the warm weather of the summer. My mom and I one day decided to enjoy Brighton Beach together. My dad had to work that day. When we got to the beach and set our blankets down, my mom said that she had to go to the bathroom. I decided to wait for her to get back since the bathroom rest area was so close by. Looking back on this, I could see that this was a mistake. But I was a kid at this time, and I wasn't thinking what could happen with a stranger at this point. This all happened so quickly. Like, the stranger was clocking my movements since I hit the beach. Because as soon as my mom left to go to the bathroom and I looked into the big bag that my mom and I brought to the beach, which contained the suntan oil, an adult man came right up to me and asked if I would like some company. It was a sunny day at the beach as I squinted my eyes and looked up at the man. This man was a handsome African-American with a black mustache, around 25 years old and 6 feet in height. I could tell that he worked out with weights and may have even been a professional bodybuilder because he was extremely muscular. His body reminded me of professional black bodybuilder Ronnie Coleman's physique when he was winning all those Mr. Olympia contests. I tell you, this man was bulging with muscle from head to toe. He was an impressive and imposing sight. The man asked me again if I would like some company, and before I could answer, he gently took the suntanning lotion right out of my hand, sat on my blanket right next to me, and then he started putting the lotion on my body as he smiled at me and then introduced himself as Jimmy. Jimmy rubbing the suntanning lotion all over my skin really made me tingle all over, and I liked it. I smiled back, returning his smile and giving out my name, as I then happily let him put the tanning lotion all over my body. I said I was with my mom and that she would be out of the bathroom soon. As soon as I told Jimmy this, he got a worried look on his handsome face, and he told me he had to leave soon. But he also made arrangements for us to meet again at this location at a certain time tomorrow, which was 1 o'clock in the afternoon. "But wait, what would I say to my mom?" I asked him. "Tell your mom you're just enjoying Brighton Beach with your girlfriend, and she'll not know any better," he replied, as I happily agreed. Boy, was I naive. I was falling head over heels for this young bodybuilder who was way too old for me to go out with in the first place. But he was just so charming and sweet to me. and I really loved looking at all those big muscles he had. I was falling head over heels for him and readily agreed to everything that he just said to me. Before Jimmy left, he smiled at me. "I can see that you enjoy looking at my muscular body. How about this?" he said as he flexed an enormous round right-handed bicep muscle for me. "Wow!" I exclaimed excitedly as Jimmy squeezed harder and his muscle grew into an enormous mountain peak in size. Jimmy allowed me to feel his bicep, which I had to admit turned me on. Jimmy then surprised me greatly as he put his left brawny arm around me and gave me a light kiss on the lips. This made me shiver with excitement. I was kissed before by guys my own age, but never a muscle-bound older He-Man like this one. I then quickly put both of my hands in the back of my head and then laid my back flat down on the blanket and pursed my lips. I even closed my eyes, enjoying the moment, as he gave me another kiss on the lips, which was a little longer this time. "How was it?" he asked me while smiling, but before I could answer, I saw Jimmy dart away very quickly, kicking up a lot of sand. I then looked behind me and saw my mom coming back with some chicken to eat and some soda to drink. She had a smile on her face, and she didn't see Jimmy at all, thankfully, or there would be hell to pay. When my mom came back, we had started eating the meal she brought us. I pretended that nothing at all happened when she was gone. I was a pretty good actress, but in hindsight, I was really just hurting myself by not telling her about this pedophile. The next day, I showed up at the beach at the time Jimmy set for us, and lo and behold, there was Jimmy waiting for me with that big smile on his face. He sat right down on the beach blanket and wanted me to sit next to him. He then put his arm around me yet again as I giggled excitedly, knowing he was probably going to try for another kiss. When I was still giggling looking down, I could tell that he was sexually excited because I saw that his bodybuilding trunks were way too small to hide his enormous boner. Jimmy then put his finger right under my chin and raised my face up to his. "I really like you, Sasha. Do you like me?" he said, smiling as I nodded my head. "Do you want to leave this beach and have some real fun with me?" he asked. "We could go to a nearby hotel or something, honey, and we could have sex," he continued, smiling. "You do know what that is and how to do it, don't you, Sasha? You see, as soon as I saw your lovely face and golden blonde hair and the great body you have, I just knew that I had to have you for my very own," he said. I was then thinking to myself that I did hit puberty early in life. My boobs were extremely large for my age. My boobs were so big I couldn't even see my toes when I looked down when I walked. They were just so large, and I was also very curvy. I could see that boys my age were attracted to me and started to look at me more in school, but I didn't know if I was ready for a romance with this older adult male. Jimmy then looked at me and smiled, but I could see that now his smile was a fake, charming kind of smile. Now, why didn't I notice this before? The silly, naive girl that I was, but I sure noticed it now. I could now see that he was just a big wolf in sheep's clothing. He didn't really care what I thought. He just wanted to have his way with me and then throw me away like an old pair of shoes, or even worse, murder me. "Don't worry, honey. After sex, I'll treat you to some good pizza and ice cream, or whatever you would like to eat, okay? It'll be a day of fun and adventure for just you and me. Now what do you say?" he continued, beaming. I then thought fast and said, "Wow, that sounds great, Jimmy. Why don't we get together in one of those hotels nearby? How about the hotel named Blue Sky Guest House? I look older, and I'll get the room and be waiting in room 12 naked under the sheets for you when you arrive. How about 6 o'clock tomorrow night?" "That sounds great, honey," Jimmy said. I could tell that he was really getting excited about tomorrow, as he then gave me another long kiss. "Great, then it's a date," I replied, smiling after I received his kiss. When Jimmy kissed me the last time, it didn't feel warm at all. Like I said before, I could see now that he was just a snake in the grass. The very next day at 6 o'clock, I peeked out of the hotel's bedroom window to see Jimmy walking up. I knew that he would arrive at the hotel like clockwork. He then quickly went up to room 12 and knocked on the door.
"Come in, Jimmy. The doors are already open. and I'm waiting for you.
I cooed in my sexiest girly voice I can muster.
I'm in the bedroom.
Jimmy then told me he would be in my room in a second. And when he entered my room, I was actually hiding in the bedroom's closet. I peeked out from a crack in the closet, and I could see that Jimmy was totally naked with his member throbbing like a jackhammer. Unknown to Jimmy and to his great surprise, I called on some of my friends, Ivan, Boris, Dmitry, and Vladimir, who were all from the Russian mafia within my neighborhood to meet him there when he arrived. These mobsters were all in their 20s, tough as nails, with some even holding baseball bats, and they beat Jimmy to a pulp with their brass-knuckled fists and baseball bats. They hated pedophiles. They beat Jimmy so severely. He was a bloody mess, but they didn't kill him. I told them not to. We just wanted Jimmy to really get the point that pedos were not wanted in Little Odessa ever. After the beating, Jimmy soon cleared out of town, badly beaten but alive. In my neighborhood, we decided to handle the problem ourselves instead of calling the police. Small town justice, one could say. Everybody in my family was happy I was okay when I told them about this later. My mom then gave me a stern lecture on stranger danger that I really took to heart. I was glad too that I would probably never see Jimmy around my area ever again. I was very, very lucky to escape this dangerous pedophile. Some other children were not so lucky. So, for some context, my grandma lives in a secluded rural area in the mountains near an abandoned cabin about 3 miles up the mountain. I, at the time, a 22-year-old female, and my fiancé, a 22-year-old male, decided it would be a good idea to make a trip to my grandma's to see if we could buy the cabin. It was owned by an older couple, and they were good friends of my grandpa before he passed away. So, we drive down Friday night and spend the night with my grandma and then visit the older couple to discuss the price and plan. We'll call them J and K. When we get there, Jay says we should go up to the cabin to see if it would be large enough. We were planning on getting married in the fall, and also having kids a little later. So Em and I hop in the Jeep and make the drive up the mountain. About halfway up the mountain, I had spotted a younger man. He waves us down and my boyfriend stops. Here's what I can remember. "Hi, I'm sorry to stop you, but my car broke down just a few minutes up the road, and I could really use some help." I turned to look at him. I've never seen this dude before. And this is a community where everyone knows everyone and everything. I mouth no to him before turning back to the man. "Sorry, brother. Can't help you there. The mother-in-law isn't feeling too good, and she needs some help fixing up her heat pump." The man turns back to me and just glares at me before we drive off. Em and I just shrugged it off. Fast forward a few weeks, and Em and I bought the cabin and are starting to plan the wedding, when out of the blue we hear a loud bang at the front door. I had become very paranoid in the few weeks we moved out here due to the bears, coyotes, and rabid raccoons in the area. I told Em to not answer the door without looking through the peephole. He nods at me and walks over to the door. He turns to me wide-eyed and sits back down at the table. "What happened? Who's at the door?" He turns to look at me, and then says with a shaky voice, "It was that guy from a few weeks ago. He looks mad." I try to wrap my head around for why he could be here. He must be one of the neighbors. I was just trying to write off why he was at our front door. Em shakes his head and then says, "Babe, the nearest neighbor is J and K, and they live about 30 minutes away from the house. And we bought this place when they said the cabin on the other side was about to be foreclosed." He was right. I started to panic. There was really no reason for him to be knocking on the front door. "Is he still there? He can't be, right?" He got up but told me to go upstairs to our bedroom. I nodded and hurried up the stairs. Only a few minutes later, Em comes charging up the stairs and then pulls me into the master bathroom, which, by the way, is the only room upstairs besides the attic bedroom without a window. He looks rattled and locked the door. "Okay, don't freak out," but as I turned to look through the peephole, I saw him leave the front stoop and try climbing to the balcony. I was worried for not only our safety, but J and K's. I had luckily brought my phone with me, and I told Em that I was calling them and then the cops. "Tell the cops to hurry. The drive from town to us is far. I nodded and decided to just call 911. After explaining the situation to the operator, I then stressed that they needed to hurry. M then told me that he was grabbing his pistol. I told him to make sure that the guy wasn't on the second story balcony. He nodded and he told me to lock the door behind him. I did as he said, and in minutes the bathroom door was unlocked and M came sprinting in, his picking on the lock on the balcony door, and luckily he didn't see or hear me. I started to freak out as I relayed all the info to the officer, then told her that M was armed now. The operator told me that the cops were almost there and for me to stay calm. M was really worried because we had actually just found out that I was 2.5 months pregnant with our triplets. He came over and held my hand as we waited. At this point, I was in the bathtub just sobbing. A few minutes later, I heard the glass shattering and incoherent screams. I told the operator that he just broke in. The very kind operator told me that the police were pulling in the driveway and for M to be ready to defend himself if it came to it. She told me that M wouldn't get in trouble for it to ease me, then came pounding on the bathroom door. I screamed and M told the man that if he didn't leave, he would shoot him. The man didn't listen, and he actually tried to kick the door open. This resulted in M shooting the door 4 times, and I told the operator that M shot the door. The operator, which again was an absolute angel, assured me that the cops wouldn't arrest M. The cops started screaming at the man because luckily M didn't kill him, but hit him in his knee and hip instead. The cops took him away and we decided to press charges for trespassing and breaking and entering, and after the police investigation, also attempted murder. Turns out the man confessed to wanting to kill us due to us buying the cabin. Apparently, he came to Jay wanting to buy the cabin a few weeks before we did, but Jay told him that it was already sold to a family friend. So in a dark act of revenge, he wanted to kill M and I in hopes of getting the cabin in the very end. The story takes place when I was 17 years old in a suburb outside of Detroit, Michigan. I'm 24 years old now. I'm a male and I was fairly thin when this story takes place. This provides some context for later. When I was a teenager, I went back and forth between my parents fairly often. Neither of my parents had much money, and they struggled to even put food on the table. At the time, I smoked weed a lot, and I really had no motivation or drive. So I did what I could to easily make money, which was to sell weed. I didn't have a car at the time, so I had to drive to my dad's house to buy and I would walk it out to them. My dad was an alcoholic and pothead, so he either didn't notice or care what I was doing. I had a lot of regulars and repeat customers. I would sometimes get people adding me on Snapchat to buy, and usually the person referring them would ask first before giving out my information. One night I got a friend request from someone who I didn't recognize. I figured someone gave my information out and just didn't let me know. To set this scene, I'd often just play video games most of the night and then get up and run some out whenever I got a text. I'd have them pull into the driveway but not reversing in so it would make it harder for them to drive off without paying. This night, it was just after midnight in November, so it was cold, windy, and pitch black outside. We had little to no street lights, just the scattered porch light that was left on. I got the text from the previously mentioned unknown person on Snapchat. All they messaged was,
"Are you available?"
I responded yes, but who is this? They told me someone referred me, and the name checked out as one of my regulars, so I asked them how much they wanted. It was a much larger quantity than usual. We agreed upon a price, and they said they were heading over. I got the text from them that they had made it. When I looked outside though, I saw no one in the driveway, even though I told them to pull into the driveway. I messaged them, "Man, I don't see you. Are you at the right address?" They immediately responded,
"Yes, I'm parked in the road."
I then messaged them again, "Well, can you pull into the driveway? It's way too dark to see in the street." I waited almost 10 minutes and got no response, so I made the poor decision to just go to them in the street. As I was walking out of my house, I noticed how dark the car was. It looked as if they had the engine off, which I thought was odd. As I got closer, I realized the windows were completely tinted and blacked out. The car also had a red racing stripe and the car was white. To paint a better picture, one side of the car was the road, and the other side was a patch of woods next to my dad's house. I'm approaching from the passenger side, so I'd have the car in front of me and the woods behind me. I was about 10 meters away from the car, and I noticed that the front and back passenger windows were cracked just enough to see their eyes looking at me. I could clearly see three eyes staring at me. They were all wide-eyed, which made me feel very uneasy. I stopped in my tracks just about 5 to 8 meters from the car, and I called out the name of the person on Snapchat. I didn't get a response. They just continued to stare at me, and I called out again. Again, no response. I wondered if they could even hear me, so I called out again louder. Still no response, though. I then began to walk another step forward, when I then heard rustling behind me in the woods. I turned around and clearly saw what appeared to be a huge man creeping towards me just past the tree line. He looked like an offensive lineman. He was very huge. I looked back to the car and they were still staring at me. I started to back away and I heard loud sudden movements behind me. I did the only thing I could think to do, which was to sprint back to my house. I made it back to my house, locked the door, and then looked out the window, and they were still there. I saw the man walk out of the woods, go back to the car, and then get in the driver's side back door. They then just slowly drove off. I messaged them back on Snapchat on my phone, asking them what the hell was that. About an hour later, I then got a response.
You got very lucky. That's what happened.
And then they blocked me shortly after. This may not sound that scary to some, but I've never felt so scared in my life. I had way too much anxiety to sleep for the next few nights. Them knowing my address didn't help. Anytime I left my house, I was constantly on the lookout for that car. Then a week later, I had walked out to sell to a friend slash regular. As I'm walking away after making the sale, I catch that same car from that night out of the corner of my eye. I could see them parked two houses down. The same car with the same tinted windows and racing stripe. I then went back inside and watched it from the upstairs window. Then a few minutes later, it drove away very slowly. I never saw or heard from them again after that. To start this story, I have to tell you a little about myself. I'm always to work early, because I was raised that if you're on time, you're late. However, when it comes to anything else, I'm not a very punctual person. This particular morning, my husband was needed at church on time, so he took off separate from me and I stayed back to finish getting ready, and my goal was to sneak in right as service started. As my husband was heading out the door, I called out that I loved him and then snuck in for a kiss as he was on his way. I still had to find clothing and do my hair. I ran upstairs and picked up a top and a pair of joggers that were clean off my bedroom floor. Yes, I'm really terrible at putting away clean laundry. I ran into the bathroom and brushed my hair and then put on some eyeliner and mascara, and then did my lipstick quickly. I took our puppy out to the bathroom one last time before grabbing my purse and car keys and then running for the door. As the door swung shut, I had heard my dog barking. I got into my car and turned on the ignition. And if you're like me, you can already see where this is going. If you guessed it, I didn't have any gas, so I drove him to the gas station and hopped out of my car to put some gas in the tank. Now, I always have my AirPods in my ears listening to something, not really paying attention to my surroundings. Well, after I slid the hose in the car and the gas started pumping, I got an uneasy feeling. I stopped what I was listening to and just scanned the parking lot. I then saw three men in a red truck with no backseat cab just staring at me. I remember it being so weird to me because they had the windows down with no music playing and not talking or pumping gas when they were in the gas pumping area. I just kept my glance at them while I hopped out of my car to take the hose out and then tighten my gas can. I was on high alert, not taking my glance away from those men, and they weren't taking theirs off me either. After I got back into my vehicle, I shut my door and locked it. These men did not once take their glance off me. I stayed in my car with the doors locked, not driving because I was terrified they were going to follow me. I tried to get a hold of my husband, but again, he was at church, so I knew there was a slim chance he would pick up the phone. I then sat there for 15 minutes waiting in my car. I then noticed a woman walk right out of the gas station and get into her car. I got a pit in my stomach just then as she started to drive, because so did the red truck. At the moment, I thought that I had a reason to fear those men. So she then pulled away and they went after her. I pulled out after them, and I was freaking out the whole time, in hopes that I was wrong and they would just choose to leave at the same time. Then, after about 6 minutes of driving, the woman pulled off in a mobile home park, and the red truck also turned into the mobile home park. I didn't know what to do. I was scared, but I did notice that there were lots of people outside in the mobile home park, so I didn't report it. But to this day, I'm still kicking myself for not reporting it. I'm still scared that one day I might run into the Big N, so I switch gas stations. I haven't heard anything on the news or seen anything on the internet to indicate those men being caught or those men doing anything else. A couple of years back, I used to work as an adoption specialist through the foster care system. If you don't know what an adoption specialist is, we would help kids find their forever homes, and then we would do the adoptions for family members as well as foster parents adopting kids through the foster care system. So that being said, as an adoption specialist, sometimes my kiddos were not always in the area that I worked or lived. So we would have to go out and see the kiddos once a month as an adoption specialist. I was required to go out a little more than once a month to see one of the unmatched kids because we were working at finding this child a forever family. I won't say where because I don't want to give out any identifying information, but I had to drive pretty far to see this kiddo at a facility in a city that doesn't really have the greatest reputation. I decided to leave early due to not knowing where this facility was, and due to it being far away that I didn't know what type of traffic there could be. So I left early. When I got to the city, I looked down at the clock in my car and realized that I'm 2.5 hours early for my appointment with the kiddo. So I pull up my GPS and see what's around, and I see that there's a mall just about 8 minutes away from me. So I drive to the mall and then parked my car. As I'm heading inside, this man says something to me that I'm pretty or beautiful. I don't really remember. I didn't really take this as odd though at that point in time. Then as I'm walking more in the mall, I realize that this is a huge mall. And I realized that there's not a lot of people there and there's a lot of twists and turns throughout the mall. But I just decided that for whatever reason, I'm just going to go in Victoria's Secret and look at the clothing. I really like their pink brand, the sweatshirts and the leggings. So I decided to go in there. And I also had a return that I had to make in my car as well. So I go and purchase a really cute jacket from there, then made my return. Well, as I'm walking out, someone says something to me. I don't really remember what it was. I think it was just about my shoes or outfit. So I got a little uneasy because as I was walking, he was right behind me. I didn't know if he was following me or not, but I was just really nervous and scared. So as I'm walking out, he's still behind me. I then realize it was the same guy that I saw before as I was walking in the mall. He then starts to try and say something else to me as well. And when I turn around, the dude is walking behind me. Somehow, now there were also two other men behind him as well, so three in total. I then walked very fast to my car, got out on the main road as fast as possible, and just drove into the facility where I could then see the kiddo. I just went in there early and waited in the parking lot. Moral of the story is if you don't know an area well, always make sure that you have somebody to go with you before you decide to start exploring. Also, malls can be terrifying in general, especially when you're alone. There's a lot of blind spots for people who won't be able to see you, and there's a lot of places for people to hide and grab you. Please stay safe out there, everyone. I used to live in a city in the UK called Glasgow. It's often compared to Chicago, Illinois for crime, as the knife crime gets out of control. Gangs are really rough in the areas, but in the posh or normal areas, you'll be fine. At one point, it was actually named as being more deadly than Chicago. I lived there during this time for university. One day I was in the city center. It was bustling like it always was, and I was exiting a store on a very well-known street. I was with my friend who I'll call Cass. I don't know why, but I turned to the side and happened to notice two guys. They looked like they were late teens. I saw a flash of silver, and I froze as it hit me. Boy 1 was holding Boy 2 tightly against him. The glint of a machete kitchen knife was clear as day as he marched him up a hill in the street. I grabbed my friend's arm to get her attention and tried to explain. She seemed skeptical, but she saw how adamant I was. I actually saw the tip of the knife right in the boy's back. Now, I was 18 at the time and extremely stupid. I then told Kaz that we had to do something. We ought to follow them and try to intervene. I know. Kaz then told me I was insane and they were clearly thugs and to just leave well enough alone. But I couldn't. I told her we had to follow them in case something happened. She protested, but I didn't listen and took off. And she, being the good friend she is, followed me. Now, neither one of us were at all intimidating. I'm only 5'3 and Kaz was 5'7, but we had no muscle at all. We weren't at all menacing, as two females and a crazy dude with a knife would probably assume we were easy targets. And to be fair, we were so dumb. Especially me. We followed them discreetly, or what I think of as discreetly. And the guy with the knife seemed to be talking to the other boy. They darted down a side alley after walking for ages. Kaz and I just stopped and stared at each other. Kaz then whisper hissed at me to call the police, but I dared to walk and then look down the alley. I saw that the two guys were now face to face. The guy had the tip of the blade on the other dude's Adam's apple, and I didn't realize that I gasped. They both then looked at me, and I froze. It felt like a whole century. We stood watching each other before I then turned around and ran. I made sure that Kaz was following me, but I was too scared to turn around. We ended up running through people's gardens, and we didn't stop until we reached a little corner shop. We didn't phone the police because we felt like there was nothing to tell them. I didn't know what was going down between those guys, but they were obviously in a gang or something. Maybe a drug deal gone wrong or something. But I learned my lesson that day. It's never worth trying to be the hero. It just gets you in trouble in the end. I'm really lucky that I wasn't stabbed that day, and I put my friend and myself in such danger for no good reason. I'll never be that stupid again. Hey everyone, that's about it for today's stories. If you have your own story that you would like to send, you can send it in at southerncannibal.com, or you can email it at southerncannibalstories@gmail.com. I look forward to telling your story. Have a good night or good day, everyone. And remember, to always...